when you look at it first, it's frustrating to, you know, a lot of people, the players and even the coaches and sometimes the fans. And at the end of the day, I think you got to give it a chance and see where they want to go. They're trying to clean up the faceoff so there's no headbutting or even, you know, there was linesmen getting injured from getting whacked and all that stuff.
Welcome back. Melnick in the afternoon, hour number three on this beautiful day. Hope you're enjoying it, along with Rod Francis and Mitch Gallo. Mitch Melnick with you until 7 o'clock. Claude Julien, after practice today on the face-off violators, crackdown on that this exhibition season, along with the slashing, the tapping as a result of the Crosby-Mathot incident, the Johnny Gaudreau injury from a year ago, and a whole lot more with Pierre McGuire.
Hockey insider Pierre McGuire, brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub, with six locations in and around Montreal. YeOldOrchard.com.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How you doing?
Excellent. Good morning, or good afternoon, Mitch.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's okay.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
Yeah, you had a nap?
No, no.
Just woke up from your nap?
No. I wish.
You wish? No, that wouldn't be good.
That would mean real games are happening.
Oh, when is your nap time normally?
12:30 to about 1:30.
Yeah, that's a good solid 1 hour nap.
And then right to the gym, then right to the rink.
Yeah. So there are some people. We just had Ray Ferraro return finally. So Ray is back with us every Tuesday and Thursday, and he was bemoaning the fact that people in the media are already complaining and whining about the fact that there were so many quote unquote ticky tacky penalties in action last night. This is what happens, right? When we came out of the lockout, we had all these hooking penalties, and eventually the players figured it out.
Yeah, they wanted to get rid of obstruction, so they had zero tolerance on obstruction. So what they did is they made it a major point of emphasis going forward, and the players responded just like they'll respond to this. That's how you do it. Listen, preseason games are preseason games for a reason. They're to get everybody into form, not just the players and the coaches, but also the officials. And so I think what you're seeing more than anything else now is George Parros basically saying that there's a new guy that's running this thing, and this is the way it's going to be called, and you're going to follow the letter of the law.
Yeah. As it should be. You think they stay with it? Because this is the same situation every year, and then some general manager complains about the fact that it hurt his team, and let's loosen things up again.
Well, I think some of it will be standard operating procedure as we go along. I don't see it being changed. I think potentially you could see, for instance, a face-off violation stuff. I think players will adapt to that. But if it starts to get, you know, over the top and starts to add time to games, then I think you're going to have issues.
How do you watch these early exhibition games?
I'm watching for players more than anything else, especially older ones I really don't pay attention to much. The younger ones I pay attention to just to see whether they're making progress or whether they are where I thought they would be coming into maybe their first or second camp. So that's basically how I watch. I don't really – maybe if there's a new coach in a different place and you knew that structurally things had to change, see if they've started implementing any of those new ideologies. So it's a little early yet to see that. It's only one game in for most of the teams. If you're Edmonton and Calgary, you're two games in, even though you played two games on one night. So you never know.
All right. Well, you know this market. So last night,
here comes Galchenyuk. Shoulders dipping, and he gave it away. A pass to his right. A couple of head fakes, but he put it right onto the stick of Tim Schaller. Those are the things you... Obviously, we're early, but you want to skate it in and get set up.
He gave the puck away a couple of times, one that was directly resulted in a goal by the Bruins. And some yes, go ahead, Rod, you're shaking.
Well, just to give you an example, I listened to the station about 21 hours a day, and earlier this morning, just to give you a bit of an idea.
As soon as they get the puck, their brain goes on pause. They have no idea what to do. Galchenyuk is digressing, Tony.
I'm not feeling it this year. I'm not feeling it. I don't have a good feeling about the Canadiens going into the season, Tony. I think they're weaker than last year.
And number 27 was getting most of the angst and ire directed his way.
It's early. It's early. I think, again, manage expectation and understand where this team is right now. And don't overinflate it. I know fans hate to hear that. I have no bone to pick with anybody there. Trust me, it's really good when Montreal wins. They're, especially for us at NBC, we love it when they're on our air. Trust me, we put them on as when we can. But they're going to be battling. That's the reality of it. They are probably not going to be a home ice team, which I've said to you, and they're going to be battling for one of the last few spots in the East for a playoff spot. That's how their team is on paper. You may not want to hear that, but that's where their team is on paper.
Yeah, but how does Galchenyuk struggling in the first exhibition game translate into where they might be in April? You know what I mean?
Like, that part I agree with. I mean, everybody's going to look for every little negative thing on him. I'm with you on that. But you're never going to fight through that. That's just, that kid's never going to get a break. Until he produces something unbelievable and the team wins with consistency, he's not getting a break. He was a third overall pick. Canes haven't had a lot of those, and so that there's always going to be scrutiny on him. And the next guy that's going to get it is Jonathan Drouin. He, as much scrutiny as you think Galchenyuk's getting, wait till Drouin has a couple bad games in a row and see what happens.
Jonathan Drouin making big news today that we touched on yesterday, and we'll get to that shortly. But this is Julien on the Galchenyuk-Gallagher Deneau line last night.
Les trois joueurs ensemble, s'ils peuvent avoir une bonne chimie. C'est, des fois, c'est un soir comme ce soir, peut-être pas aussi évident, mais c'est le premier match de 8. Et puis, ça ne veut pas dire qu'on va garder ça de cette façon-là aussi. On risque peut-être d'essayer d'autres choses, mais c'est pour ça qu'on a des matchs pré-saison.
Pierre, potentially, if all three guys do their job, you like that line?
I do. We talked about it yesterday, and remember what I talked about? I think it was Rod that asked me, what are you going to be looking for? And the coach just said it. I didn't use the term chemistry. He did. But I talked about what's their puck possession game going to be? What's Brendan going to do? Is he going to be the first man in on the forecheck? What are they going to do in terms of board play? Will Deneau have good down low coverage, force turnovers, and then quickly transition the puck? Those were the things, you know, you'd want to see from that line if they had instantaneous chemistry. Clearly that didn't happen. That doesn't mean it won't happen, and I'm with Claude on that too. I get it. Everybody's dying for hockey, and everybody in Montreal is dying for a winning team because not only are they not winning or haven't won with consistency in hockey, the football team's not very good, so there's not a lot of good stuff to talk about. I get it. I understand.
We talk a lot about insulating players in various ways. Can line mates with high hockey IQs, can that be enough to allow a player who's mostly instinctive, and I'm thinking Galchenyuk, to allow him to embrace structure, even if he may not be that kind of player, if he's a type of player that relies mostly on his instincts?
I think so. I'm just trying to think of a comparable. It's not fair because you go around the league and everybody's got different situations. But I would use potentially a player like Nick Bonino, Pittsburgh, high profile, 2 Stanley Cups in a row, very important player. He's got a hockey IQ that's insane and a fast twitch brain that just, the only reason why he is as effective as he is because he's not a great skater is his brain works at another level. And I think a player like Galchenyuk, who's really instinctive offensively, I think he's probably got some of that same fast twitch brain power. It just, for whatever reason, he's choosing not to use it because he thinks he can overwhelm people with a skill, and that's just not the way it's going to be in this league. It's really, really hard to find players like that.
Speaking of the brain.
Well, here we go.
We're going to have a scrap now.
Miller and Shaw.
Shaw, who gets a stick on him.
Oh, they were going at it for like...
Now Gallagher comes in.
45 seconds, and Miller knocked Shaw right on his back, and that's what Shaw was losing it a bit. It was just a matter of time.
All right, a couple of things here, Pierre. I think I mentioned this. When was this? Late last week? I was talking about how I saw, if you were paying attention, what you saw in that Ranger series was an Andrew Shaw who was not effective, and he was clearly not right health-wise, and nobody would say it, but they finally admitted that he had a concussion. He opened up to Eric Engels in the last couple of days, Pierre, and he admitted that when he was hit in the crease early in the series by Brendan Smith, he had a cross-check delivered to his jaw. Then he fought Brendan Smith. He got tagged in that same area in the jaw. He got rocked. It's amazing he never went down. He admitted that he was not right. He was puking in the middle of the night. But he said, you go to the doctors and you tell them what they want to hear because he's a competitor. He said, those days are gone. He made a bad mistake. That was the way he was more or less raised, like a lot of hockey players. He had a terrible offseason. Last night, at the tail end of the game, a cross-check in the lower back by Kevin Millar, because they were going at it, and you could see kind of this whiplash effect on his head. He broke his stick when he left the ice. You could see he was upset. And today he's got a bad neck. And so here's an indication again, no matter how upstanding every team's medical personnel are, if you get a player who's got these quote-unquote old-school values about what it means to be a hockey player at the highest level, there's not a whole lot they can do. So you've got to have... You've got to have somebody, if the National Hockey League is serious about this, you've got to have spotters at the game who aren't gym teachers or whatever it is they do in their part-time, you know, in their life, whatever it is they do. You've got to have real people. If 90% of us watching the game that night saying, that is a shot to the jaw and he's flexing his jaw, maybe he ought to take a shift off and go inside. If we can see that, where are the spotters?
I don't know. But I know this is a term I've used with you for a long time. You've got to save the players from themselves because it's always been ingrained in them from the time they've been so young. Barring a broken bone, that's clearly obvious. Guys are going to do whatever they can to cover stuff up because they want to play. So you have to save players from themselves. I understand exactly the mindset of Andrew. I remember a player limping through a parking lot once in a western city, and Gordon Miller and I were there, and we said to him, what are you doing? Why aren't you getting rehab? Why aren't you with the trainer? He goes, my junior coach told me not to let them see any pain, so I don't want anybody to know that I'm hurt. Well, yeah, the kid was hurt pretty bad. You got to save players from themselves. I've said this to you for a lot of years, and it requires really aggressive training staffs. It requires coaches that want to get on board, and I really think it requires a message right from the start of the year that you tell players, if you are going to be injured, you're not going to lose your job because of an injury.
And there's no way, unless you're physically taking the player by the hand and following him home, that, right? There's no way to know for sure if he's suffering the effects of what might be a concussion.
The only way you could tell is silly things that might happen on a plane, guy losing his balance, guy not right at practice. You know, you see him grabbing a lot of aspirins or Tylenols, different situations, you know, just or his roommates. And even today, that's another problem in this league. After so many years of service, guys don't have to have roommates anymore. You know, the legendary story is Keith Jones saving Eric Lindros's life in Nashville. If Lindros hadn't had a roommate, Lindros would have probably bled to death in his bedroom. And it was Keith Jones that called the trainer, and they eventually got upstairs and took care of him. But in this NHL, most of the guys don't have roommates anymore.
Right.
So that's another issue unto itself. So there's a lot of different things behind the scenes that happen. But no, you're absolutely right, Mitch. It's really troubling.
All right. So, and for those who are wondering what happened to Andrew Shaw's game, it is pretty evident. And now you know from him himself, courtesy of Eric Engels at Sportsnet. Okay, back to this.
Just one more thing on that, though, because you know that I really like him a lot, Andrew. And I watched him basically battle his way into the NHL. But I also know when Chicago traded him, I know what I said to you, he is not an overly large guy, and he plays right on the edge. And he's had some injuries, and that's part of what you have to identify when you make those kinds of deals for those kinds of players. Because it does have an effect over time. It's not Andrew's fault. That's the body that he was given. But he plays with such a fierce mentality that those guys don't last as long. That's just the reality of it.
This morning on The Morning Show with Connor McKenna, Sean Starr, and Rick Moffitt.
But it seems like the Duchesne saga is inching forward. But as Duchesne said at least three times there, and the agent would echo it, they're just looking at things now day by day.
Darren Dreger, of course, on Matt Duchesne is news out of Ottawa. It just gets worse for Ottawa. Colin White, right? Colin White is now at, what is it, six to eight weeks. So Mitch Gallo, one of the teams that we haven't necessarily associated with Duchesne, maybe the Ottawa Senators?
Yeah, I was thinking about two teams, Ottawa and Columbus, because I'm looking at potential players that would make sense in this type of deal. And if I'm Colorado, I mean, I love what I saw from Thomas Chabot last year, and I think that trade might make a little sense.
Would you do that, Pierre?
Repeat that trade, because I just want to get my head around. I want to take it slow. Go ahead.
Thomas Chabot for Matt Duchene.
No.
You wouldn't trade Chabot for Duchene. Is that what you're saying? Not one for one.
No.
Would you include him in a bigger deal?
No.
Okay,
I'm not a fan of keeping up.
No, I know. I don't know. You love Thomas Chabot, and you're about Matt Duchene, right?
No, I'm just not giving up. I just don't believe in that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I made my point on the Subban deal. I'm not. You know, I made my point on the Chelios deal a long time ago when I was coaching the league. I was actually coaching the league when that happened. I don't like trading good defensemen. Just not a fan.
Pierre, at the other end for Colorado, what about Cody Ceci? Would that be enough from their standpoint?
Well, they need Cody. I can tell you, you know how we talk a lot, Mitch Gallo, on this show anyways, about players that are trending up? Cody Ceci is trending up. This would be the wrong time to trade him. He is going to be an impact player for that team. He had a tremendous playoff. He didn't get nearly enough acclaim. He's a big body. He can really skate. He can handle a puck. He's extremely coachable. He's an Ottawa kid, played for the 67s. No, I wouldn't be thinking about moving him. If I'm Ottawa, I'm not touching my defense because you're going to have to worry about Carlson's contract soon. So I'm not – I mean, you got to think long term. Colin White – I can just tell you guys this. Colin White is going to be a really good player for that team. Donnie Sweeney hasn't made a lot of mistakes with the Bruins. One of the mistakes he made is he didn't draft Colin White, who was right in his backyard playing for Noble and Greenhow School before he went to Boston College. And I think they know that now. But that's water under the bridge. He's done so many good things in Boston since. But I would just tell you this. If I'm Ottawa, I'm not in a rush to move any of my defensemen.
And if you're Columbus?
Well, it would be interesting. One of the interesting things there would be the relationship with John Tortorella and Matt Duchene. John Tortorella couldn't coexist with Ryan Johansson. So I don't know how he would, exist with Matty Duchene. Johansson and Duchene are very similar type guys, very, very similar.
How about the trade that was made over the weekend? We missed it yesterday. Jason Demers, Montreal kid,
yep.
Sent out west, and McGinn goes to Florida.
Yep. I think more than anything else, the defenseman, Demers is a good puck mover. I think I talked with you last year that I thought he was a tinge overrated defensively, but he's a good depth puck mover. Jamie's just an energy player, and Bobby Bugner would know him from his time in San Jose. So I think that's probably where that fit happens there.
All right, and to conclude, his agent Alan Walsh will join us in just a few minutes. We touched on it yesterday. It's now official. The details are filled in. Jonathan Drouin has committed to donating $500,000 to the Shum Foundation in Montreal over the next 10 years, and he has pledged to help them raise another $5 million on top of that.
Yeah,
How about that?
That speaks to the type of person that he is. You know that Alan had to be heavily involved in that, so hats off to him as well. That's giving back to your community. I have so much respect for guys that do that. You know, I was at a golf event yesterday when I was talking to you guys, and then I was talking to some agents, professional, in different sports, football, baseball, basketball, and they were talking about one school in the NCAA where the players, the combined total income from the players that had graduated from that school was over $200 million over the course of their NBA careers. And the agent was saying none of the players had given back a gift more than $10,000. And I was like, whoa, that's unbelievably low. That's terrible. And then you hear what guys like PK do or what Miko, or Shaka Koivu, I should say, did, or obviously now what Jonathan's done. And it just shows you there is an unbelievable sense of community in the NHL when you live in a community, you work in a community, you give back. And most of the guys that I know give back significantly. So there's a lot to that.
And some late-breaking news this afternoon.
Brian Boyle?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's
Let me inform our listeners, courtesy of Amanda Stein on her Twitter, from Team Dr. Michael Farber, Brian Boyle diagnosed with a type of cancer of the bone marrow, largely treatable. The doctor said it was caught early on and it's treatable with medication. Boyle saying, I feel as close to normal as I can feel. I'm expecting to live my life, to live a normal life. I believe I'm in good hands.
Well, this is, you know how we talk about what goes on in preseason? One of the great things that happens in the NHL, I think most leagues, is the physical, the preseason physical. And I think it snips a lot of things out early for a lot of people, both ones that you hear about and ones you don't hear about. And it's an important process over the course of an NHL season, the initial preseason physical for everybody that works for an organization. So, yeah, no, there's something to that.
And he will be in the lineup on opening night. He's expected to be in the lineup on opening night.
From what I've been told, this is very treatable, the form of cancer that he has, and that he should be able to live his life extremely well.
Pierre Maguire back tomorrow will help tee up the Canadiens Capitals practice game, as Michael Farber likes to call them.
That's good. He's a voice of reason.
Thanks, Pierre.
Take care, Mitch.
Do it again tomorrow. When we come back, agent provocateur Alan Walsh will join us.
Pierre Maguire, brought to you by Dagwoods. Voted Cult Montreal's best sandwich in Montreal third year in a row.